Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn from a University of California Davis study about how walnuts, just eating a handful each day, can help prevent prostate cancer. That's good news, something natural and inexpensive, walnuts. And of course, we want to reduce the excess cholesterol and increasing insulin sensitivity also are capable of reducing the level of a protein associated with prostate cancer. According to Paul Davis, a nutritionist, who was the lead author of this study, there's lots of evidence that walnuts, despite being high in fats, but good in healthy fats, are actually a great addition to a healthy diet. Now, there's lots of ways to use walnuts. Why not throw them into a blender with an avocado and a tablespoon or teaspoon, either one, depending upon your size, of coconut oil. Blend that up, and then now you have a delicious smoothie, specific. Now, you can do a lot with that. I could make that into a spicy and dish, aromatic dish, even add in something to make it slightly sweet and almost tropical, like clove. And putting fresh clove in, anise seed in. But get the walnuts, get the avocado, get the coconut oil into your body. They're all good fats, all good for your heart. But in the case of walnuts, what it does is this. Walnuts or walnut oil for 18 weeks was used to compare with a diet that did not have that. What it was found is that the walnut-rich diet helped reduce prostate cancer growth by up to 40%. That's good. How so? It could also be linked to the lower levels of an insulin-like growth factor, IGF-1, a protein strongly associated with prostate cancer. And that's also important. So, aside from determining the effects of a walnut-rich diet on prostate tumor growth, the researchers experimented also with what specific anti-tumor properties were in the walnuts. And they found that it's rich in selenium, and that's good, magnesium and zinc. All three are anti-carcinogenic nutrients. They have other things, of course they do, but that's at the top of the list. And also walnuts are a vegan source that I use for the omega-3 fatty acids. And those are beneficial for your heart and brain, and they turn off inflammation and help heal your arteries. So it's all good. Also, walnuts can reduce cholesterol. That's another thing it does. So just showing you that all this good work, and by the way, there are other institutions, including University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio, arrived at the same conclusion. They also found that eating a modest amount of walnuts can help protect men against prostate cancer. And by the way, 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer. It's a slow cancer. And they contain melatonin, gamma tocopherol, and what are called egallitanins, E-L-L-A-G-I-T-A-N-N-I-N-S. And these tannins are very important also. These all reduce oxidative stress, inflammation, and the expression of genes linked to chronic illnesses like cancer. So something simple, something easy, something we can do. Now, the next study I'm going to talk about in more in depth in a moment is from the University of Cincinnati, and it's about, can a mother's stress impact children's disease development? Now, stress is an expectant, on an expectant mother's lifestyle, can impact the baby's chance of developing disease, perhaps even over the course of the child's life. That's why I've suggested repeatedly, before you have an intentional pregnancy, understand that there are psychosociological factors like lack of social support, loneliness, your marriage status, bereavement, how toxic your attitude is. Are you coming from a highly reactive, negative position, or one of joy and happiness? Do you see things from a brighter more optimistic side, or from a negative, more doomsday side, apocalyptic? And especially now, are you confident in yourself to where you do not have to dominate other people? Or do you have to have the first and last word? Must you always be right? Must you win every argument? And what do you think that does, not just to the people in your life, but also to your own immune system? All of that will predicate what will happen to the child. The child's taking on the epigenetic, epa, larger, genetic, your genes. So the environment, the larger environment, including everyone in it, and the messages and stimulation that the child has, even in the womb, all become permanently imprinted into the central nervous system, into the consciousness, and into the genes. Now, later in life, there are ways of dealing with that, but you can't erase it. It's not like you get up one day and you purge it out of the body. But controlling it, these impulses, is very important. But just understand, we don't have a single place in the United States where people who are anticipating or wanting to become pregnant can get the input they need at all levels, nutritional, environmental, meaning the environment they're in, and the kind of, well, for example, are you using a pesticide like glyphosate in Roundup, spraying the weeds? I've seen people who've had in their babies, right beside the baby crib, to keep the flies away, these pest strips. Those are loaded with pesticides. The baby's bringing it in. They were not aware of it. So there's a lot that you have to do to pay attention to having a healthy, clean, personal environment and mindset. So that's what this is saying. And it shows, because I've seen adults, highly educated, and by the way, this is published in the peer-reviewed journal. It's a scholarly journal, Biological Psychiatry. But I've seen people who should have had everything going for them. They had graduate degrees. They were successful in their career. They were smart, attractive, well-read. And yet they were a psychological mess. They couldn't hold friendships. They were too dominant in their relationships. They were argumentative all the time. They were so insecure. They were harping constantly about not being loved enough, not given enough attention. And so nobody would stay in these people's lives. They were miserable people. The older they got, the more miserable. And at the same time, wanting to have a child. And as a friend, they said, "What do I think?" And I said, "You shouldn't have a child at this time until you get your life together, because everything you're feeling now, all of your insecurities, you're going to put those insecurities right epigenetically into that developing fetus. And then they're not going to understand why they're acting out later in life." Just something to consider. Now, I'm going to give you a quote, and I'd like to see who knows the author of this quote. And please keep in mind that if you have an answer, call us on our talkback line, 888-874-4888. I'd like to see who's on top of this. Here's the quote. "In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it is perhaps well to ask what kind of nation we are and what direction we want to move in. You can be filled with bitterness, with hatred, and a desire for revenge. You can move in that direction as a country in great polarization, filled with hatred towards one another. Or we can make an effort to understand and to comprehend and to replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that has spread across our land, with an effort to understand with compassion and love. What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence or lawlessness, but love and wisdom and compassion towards one another, and a feeling of justice towards those who still suffer from within our country, whether they are white or black." Who said that? All right? If you know, call us 888-874-4888, because John Whitehead and Nisha Whitehead wrote a commentary. I'm going to share some of that with you in a few moments. Also today, keeping that in mind, why are we a nation so divided? Who benefits from this? What is their purpose? Why would we have this going on? Why are good journalists being silenced? Why are good activists being arrested or erased? Why is anyone trying to make an honest effort at reporting truths now looked upon like they're Julian Assange? They show corruption, and therefore we now think of them as being corrupt. The people that they exposed are praised, and they're condemned. How lopsided is that? So we're going to hear from Cheryl Atkinson, the 5-time Emmy Award-winning journalist who worked for PBS, NPR, and CBS, and she'll have a 10-minute segment. Also, a 5-minute talk about what some on the left think about freedom of speech. Now, growing up on the left, if the far left, far more populist and humanistically oriented than almost anyone else I knew, I'd never experienced this, but now it's rampant. Why? And also, I've told you many times about Greta Thunberg. I believe her message is honest, prescient, and needed to be actualized. But then behind her, I saw, and I had proof of, a complete manipulation, that this wasn't about just the message. This is about capitalizing on it. And we did a whole hour on this. The corporations, the foundations, the people. It was orchestrated. But someone went to one of these world conferences on the environment and saw her getting out of her car, electric car, okay, and just went over and filmed it. And then went inside and asked people about what did they think of someone who had what was in her car. It's kind of an interesting little piece, you'll hear it. But let's go back to the latest on health and healing. So now we know that walnuts are important and we should have them. That's good. We also know that having positive thoughts, especially if you're a mother and you're under stress and how that can impact your child's disease development, because the child will end up with greater disease, that we have, at least we know it's a problem. Now let's find positive solutions like mindful meditation, energy work, qigong. These are ways of helping move energy throughout the body and helping to allow a dominant healthy qi to replace the toxic or maladjusted qi. So again, as long as we know there's a problem and we know there's solutions, that's good. Central South University, which is in China, found a study that looked at a meta, meaning many, studies, and they found a strong association between the greater intake of omega-3 fatty acids and lower risk of venous thromboembolisms. Well, that's really good. And by the way, people most likely to suffer from some of these thromboembolisms are people who fly a lot. You've got to get up and you've got to move if you're on a plane. Every hour, just walk from one end of the plane to the other, go to the back of the plane near the restrooms, and just balance yourself and do like 2 minutes of half squats, going up on your toes and then down. You've got to get the circulation pumping. And otherwise, you're at risk of throwing a clot. But this showed that if you're taking the omega-3 fatty acids, that can help prevent that. Also, taking cayenne in capsule form 3 times a day can keep the blood thin and keep the platelets from aggregating, clumping together. That's important too. From the University of Trento, which is in Italy, and Harvard University, and King's College, then you have a study about the good bacteria in your diet and what it will mean. And what they found is that when you're eating a healthy plant-based diet, you can either positively or negatively correlate with an individual risk of certain conditions, including diabetes and heart disease. So if you're eating an unhealthy diet, it correlates to diseases. If you're eating a healthy diet, it correlates to wellness or the absence of disease. So diets rich in certain plant-based foods are linked to the presence of gut microbes that are associated with lowering your risk of developing obesity, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease. That's according to these results of these three separate studies. And this is the largest, most detailed study of its kind, uncovering strong links between what you eat and the microorganisms, those little bacteria, and that become a part of what we call the microbiome, B-I-O-M-E, and your health. So you start eating sugar, you start eating refined carbohydrates, your white rice, pastas, pretzels, potato chips, french fries, meats, you end up taking in the bad bacteria. So just don't do it. This was published in Nature Medicine. And then we also have from Cambridge University in the United Kingdom, mindfulness can absolutely improve mental health and well-being, but it's not likely to work for everyone. There is the twist. Now, we all know that mindfulness courses can reduce anxiety and depression and stress and increase mental well-being within most but not all clinical settings. That's according to this team at University of Cambridge. They also found that mindfulness may be no better than other practices aimed at improving mental health and well-being. It's just one of the positive tools. But you have to want to change. You have to not just go through some ritual, you know, statements, but you have to actually believe in the power of patience, the power of relaxation, the power of clearing the mind, the power of being present for the moment you're in. And if you do that, it works. They found that the National Health Services in the United Kingdom offers therapies based on mindfulness to help mental health conditions and people suffering from depression and suicidal thoughts. But you've got to learn some of the skills that takes patience. Now, there's lots of workplaces, there's lots of private courses and a ton of information over the internet that you can do this. But you've got to be into it. And there's lots of randomized controlled trials that have been conducted around the world and showing that in-person mindfulness training can improve mental health and well-being. This was published in PLOS Medicine. So that's good to know also. So when we really feel stress, when we feel that we need to change something, mindfulness can help us get in that right place. And finally, from Northwestern A&F University comes a study about chicory. Now, chicory is used as a substitute for a lot of coffee. People don't want to have the green coffee bean, can use chicory. Has similar taste, but a lot more nutrition, without the adverse effects. Well, now it's been used to help treat neurodegenerative disorders. This was published in the respected online FASEB journal, a scientific journal. So chicory has a component in it, and it's called chicoric acid. And that chicoric acid can help people who have reduced memory and who are suffering from Alzheimer's disease or dementia and other neurodegenerative diseases. Now, why? According to a Dr. Liu, who was the lead author here, chicoric acid, which is a nutraceutical component of chicory, also exists in lettuces, dandelion, and other edible plants and vegetables, echinacea in good amounts, but it's most in chicory. And it helps turn off inflammation, and it has specific therapeutic intervention benefits where you don't want that inflammatory response in the brain. It turns it down. So that's good. That's terrific news. So that is the latest on health and healing. And one last thing from Rush University Medical Center, published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. A lot of people deceive themselves in this way. They start off by eating a healthy diet, like a Mediterranean diet, which has a positive impact on health. But then they ask a question, what would be the consequence if you also included unhealthy foods in an otherwise healthy diet? I see this all the time. New research reported diminished benefits from a Mediterranean diet among those with high frequency of eating unhealthy foods. So trying to eat something healthy, then eating something unhealthy, you've neutralized the benefit of the healthy effort. So if you're eating vegetables and fruits and olives and legumes and fish, potatoes, unrefined cereals, that's terrific. If you then start throwing in fried foods and refined grains and sweets, red and processed meats, full-fat dairy products, and pizza, you've just undermined the benefit of the healthy eating. So just understand, be disciplined and benefit. I'm Gary Nall, and we are 21 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and let's see if anybody was able to find out who the quote I shared with you was. You'll call 888-874-4888. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us. Pat from New Jersey, your turn.
Gary, thank you so much for your service. It's really most appreciated. The quote's from Robert F. Kennedy. It was in Indianapolis, April 4th, 1968, after Martin Luther King's assassination.
Wow. Good for you. You are correct. And it was a profound statement because he saw a nation divided, and he saw that in order to honor King's legacy, we had to do so through peaceful means, not violence, and come together, share our differences, discuss things in a reasonable fashion instead of the demonization of one against the other. So it was, for me, it was an important speech, and I thank you very much for sharing that, Aunt Pat. Pat from New Jersey, she got it right, and we thank her. Let me be hopefully non-prophetic. I'm hoping that I am wrong on what I see at this moment. Things can always change, but this is what we have been reduced to. Not everyone, but too many people who have taken center stage. I'm talking about specifically, listen, please, center stage. Those in power are those acting on behest of those in power, both right and left. They have reduced the energy of our nation in the minds of people to a violent mob. In effect, a nation on the brink of martial law. A populace under house arrest, a techno-corporate state wielding its power to immobilize huge swaths of the country, and unfortunately, a constitution that is being torn apart. We are imploding on multiple fronts all at once. This is what happens when ego, greed, and power are allowed to take precedence over liberty, equality, justice, and a mindset of respecting the sanctity of another human being's life, and therefore looking at what you have in common, not what you have that is not. Just to be clear, this is not a revolution. You will not see a revolution. But this is a ticking time bomb. The vast majority of people in America, at least somewhere between 50 to 70 million Americans, are not the 1%, but they're right up there. These are your professional class. And though some were absolutely hurt in their income production during this COVID crisis, the vast majority live at the high end of their means. They will not go hungry. If they can't find cherries right now, they can order them in a specialty store where they're picked and harvested and shipped from South Africa. Or peaches they can get now, and nectarines and pears and plums, they can get those from Chile. You and I, if we were to go out to the market tomorrow, or the average person, that wouldn't be easy. We don't have to think about starving to death, but there are people in America living on $2 a day, believe it or not, several million. We have millions upon tens of millions of children who go to bed hungry each night. Imagine what it's like to be a parent of a child that you You know they're hungry, and you don't have the wherewithal to feed them. And that is growing. But you wouldn't know that part is in existence because we don't show that. Only in extreme examples do we show the people living on the streets of Los Angeles or San Francisco as if that was their first choice. Let me go be a drug addict or homeless or an alcoholic or defecate on the streets of a city. Do you think someone wakes up in the morning saying, that's the best I can do and that's what I deserve or need? No. We have to pull back and ask, what are the circumstances that have contributed to a person ending up in these places, and what responsibility do we as a society have? It doesn't matter whether it's left or right. It doesn't matter what your political persuasion is, to helping find a solution for these people, but also all the other people who will be joining them. Maybe not on the streets, but living in their cars or buying RVs and finding places to live because they no longer can afford to live in a home. And we are a nation that is torn apart until we bring ourselves together. First, you've got the president who has been accused of inciting a riot and now faces a second impeachment and a scandal that could permanently mar his legacy. While the impeachment process itself is a political beast, the question of whether President Trump incited his followers to riot is one that has even the best of legal experts debating. Do I like this president? There's not a thing I like about them. I look deeply at the people he's selected, the policies he's enacted, and I see him as a massive narcissist with a intellectual deficiency and patience to sit and understand the consequences of his actions. He is the worst environmental president on record, and yet there are other presidents who are equally bad because what he is capable of doing in America, others have done to other nations. And yet none of those people have been held accountable. All of them, including him, should be held accountable for what they incite here or elsewhere. So we have to look at a minimum that Trump's actions and words under unstatesmanlike and reckless by any standards over the course of his presidency help cause a simmering pot to boil over. But why didn't we mention the hundreds of thousands of people who came and stayed in peaceful protest, not to mention the approximately 1,000 more or less who went crazy? Those are not normal people. That's not the silent majority. Those people had an agenda, and their agenda was not one of conciliation or making change to the next election, doing so in a peaceful, nonviolent way. So this is what we're dealing with. We're also dealing with people who say they're patriots, but we should all look at this country and say we're all citizens of the same country. Why can't we act as if we care about each other, irrespective of our class, ethnicity, cultural background, age, education, or economic experience? Why can't we just find what is special and unique about each person and rejoice in their differences from us? Because it gives us a chance to interrelate and to grow and learn, instead of looking with a divisive nature towards those who are different on any level. If we cannot do that, then what you're going to do is you're going to look at the consequences of the government overreach coming in to stop this. The mainstream media has been apologizing for the tech giants, the real deep state actors, and they've gotten extremely rich and more powerful because they have the media under their control and the legislators as well. Yet these people have meted out their own version of social justice by way of digital tyranny and corporate censorship. For example, if you're one of the tens of thousands of medical doctors or scientists who find that they're parts of the pandemic that you would challenge that are not scientifically accurate or medically viable, instead of offering you a forum to share your points of view, which in any democratic society should be honored so you can debate the issue, instead you are deplatformed, you're canceled, you're censored, and then you're demonized, and you're hated, and whole hate campaigns come against these people. Yet there can be no freedom of speech if social media giants can muzzle whomever they want, whenever they want, on whatever pretext they want, in the absence of any real due process, review, or appeal, much like Wikipedia. It's a character assassination gulag. They decide that you no longer deserve any respect, they demonize you, and you have no opportunity to change any of it. This should not be allowed. Yet, understand that even Edward Snowden warned, whether it was warranted or not, the social media ban on President Trump signaled a turning point in the battle for control over digital speech. And that's exactly what is playing out as users, including those who have no ties to the Capitol riots, begin to experience lockouts, suspensions, and even deletions of their social media accounts. Remember, the First Amendment is a steam valve. It allows people to peacefully air viewpoints, vent frustrations, debate and disagree, generally work through the problems of self-governance. Without that safety mechanism in place, self-censorship is increasing, discontent festers, foment brews, and violence becomes the default response for resolving disputes, whether with the government or each other. At a minimum, we need more robust protections in place to protect digital expression and a formalized process for challenging digital censorship. Unfortunately, digital censorship is just the beginning. Once you start using social media scores, its scores coupled with surveillance capitalism to determine who is worthy enough to be part of society, anything goes. In China, which has been traveling this road for decades, millions of individuals and businesses blacklisted as unworthy based upon social media credit scores that grade them based upon whether they are good citizens and have been banned from accessing financial markets. If they're not, they can't buy real estate, they can't travel by air or train. In fact, their constant whereabouts is known and monitored, and all because of the power of the government. You've got the police, who normally exceed the constitutional limits, restraining them from brutality, surveillance, and other excesses. Only this time, despite intelligence indicating that some of the rioters were planning for mayhem, police were outnumbered and ill-prepared to deal with the incursion. Investigations underway suggest that some police may even have colluded with the rioters. Certainly, the lack of protocols adopted by the Capitol Police bear an unnerving resemblance to the lack of protocols and historically in other places. There's a pattern emerging if you pay close enough attention. Instead of restoring order, local police stand down. Without fail, what should be an exercise in how to peacefully disagree turns ugly the moment looting, vandalism, violence, intimidation tactics, and rioting are introduced into the equation. Tensions rise, violence escalates, and federal armies move on. All that is missing from the January 6th episode was a declaration of martial law, which brings us to my final point, and that is martial law. Given that the nation has been dancing around the fringes of martial law with each national crisis, it won't take much more to push the country over the edge to a declaration and military lockdown if they choose those in power. The rumblings of armed protests in all 50 state capitals and Washington, D.C. will only serve to heighten tensions, double down on the government's military response, and light a match to a powder keg state of affairs, with tens of thousands of National Guard troops and federal law enforcement personnel mobilized to lock down Washington, D.C. in the wake of the January 6th riots and in advance of the January 20th inauguration. This could be the largest military show of force in recent years. So where do we go from here? That all these events are coming to a head around Martin Luther King Jr. Day is telling. More than 50 years after King was assassinated, America has become a ticking time bomb of racial unrest and injustice, police militarization, surveillance, government corruption, and ineptitude. The blowback from a battlefield mindset and endless wars abroad and a growing economic inequality between the haves and have-nots. Making matters worse, modern America has compounded the evils of racism, materialism, and militarism with ignorance, intolerance, and fear. Callous, cruelty, meaningless, mean-spiritedness, immorality, ignorance, hatred, intolerance of others, and injustice have become hallmarks of our modern age, magnified by an echo chamber of nasty tweets and government-sanctioned brutality. And that is important. Every time I read the news headlines, or flip on the television, or open up an email, or glance at social media, which is rare, I run headlong into people consumed with backbiting, partisan politics, sniping, toxic hate, meanness, and materialism. And unfortunately, Donald Trump, in many ways, is the embodiment of this culture of meanness. And that should never have been tolerated. Remember, most people voted for Trump not because he was a better president. They voted for Trump because we've been given 40 years of false promises to the working class, the middle class, and even the professional class, and not one of those promises was fulfilled. This culture of meanness has come to characterize many aspects of the nation's governmental and social policies. Meanness today is simply a state of mind. This causal cruelty is made possible by growing polarization within the populace that emphasizes what divides us: race, religion, economic status, sexuality, ancestry, politics, etc. That is all wrong. We should be united in what we have as human beings. I find most people to be decent, ethical, and moral people. But they're never given the attention, and our lessons and news headlines never come from people doing the right thing. It's always from people doing the wrong thing. Now we have more meanness than ever before. This is the psychopathic mindset adopted by the architects of the deep state, and it applies equally whether you're Democrat or Republican. If you think you're going to see a more utopian, more humane group of people in the White House after January 20th, you won't, because most of the people coming are part of the Washington consensus. Probably upwards of 20-25% of the working people, those in running agencies, will come from the Obama administration, and we know how dysfunctional those people were and self-serving of their corporate masters. As an academic study into pathological behavior within those in power concluded, tyranny does not flourish because perpetrators are helpless and ignorant of their actions. It flourishes because they actively identify with those who promote vicious acts as virtuous. So as a result of that, people who are doing these acts of violence, as small, infinitesimal percentage of society as they are, they will see themselves as heroic. And that is unfortunate. People don't simply line up and salute. It is through one's own personal identification with a given leader, party, or social order that they become agents of good or evil. To this end, we the people have become we the police state. By failing to actively take a stand for good, we become agents of evil. It's not the person in charge who is solely to blame for the carnage. It is the populace that looks away from the injustice that empowers the totalitarian regime. And all we've had from Ronald Reagan forward are totalitarian regimes. Democrat or Republican is irrelevant. And these people welcome the building blocks of tyranny because they can use their power and control the media to justify it. Remember weapons of mass destruction? Have any of the media gone to Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and said, here's the consequences of our actions. Here's who caused these. Here's Barack Obama. Here's John Kerry. Here is Hillary Clinton. And all the other people, here are the agencies, the head of the agencies at the CIA. Here are the people who caused all these millions of people to suffer and die. We're going to hold them accountable. You will never see that happen. So that is important that we understand what is happening now, and it's only going to get worse because we do not have people who are spiritually inclined to make moral and ethical decisions, which benefits all people. Wasn't it Martin Luther King Jr. who sermonized that darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that? Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that? Right now, darkness is winning. It's not just on the world stage we must worry about the darkness winning. The darkness is winning in our communities. It is winning in our homes, our neighborhoods. COVID is an example of tyranny and consequences becoming more draconian, as you will see. It is not about eliminating a virus. That's what they pretend. So it's coming for your synagogues, your mosques, and your churches. It's coming and infiltrating our government bodies. It's winning in the hearts of men and women the world over who are embracing hatred over love. It's winning in every new generation that is being raised to care only for themselves, without any sense of moral or civic duty to stand for freedom. John F. Kennedy, killed by assassins, plural, bullets, 5 years before King would similarly be executed, spoke of a torch that had been passed to a new generation of Americans, born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Once again, in conclusion, a torch is being passed to a new generation. Unfortunately, no one is looking up to grab the torch and carry it forward because most are ensconced in some darkened place, living miserable, limited lives, looking at their truths coming from the internet, of all things. This fire is not liberating, it is destroying. This distraction into altered realities is not gaining a foothold on a road back to peace. I'm Gary Nall. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. We'll keep trying to bring you interesting insights just to give you a different perspective. And by the way, this coming Monday, I'm going to have a person on the air that I promise you will shock every person listening. He is highly acclaimed. He is a professor. He has done research that no one else has. And in my pre-interview today with him, I wanted to see what his perspective was. It's mind-blowing. I mean, it is so liberating. I will say no more. He'll be on for the full hour on Monday, from the beginning to the end. And that still won't cover everything, but it'll cover a lot. Before we go to Elizabeth McCormick, standing by in Great Britain with your questions, something new today. This is really good. It's not actually in today. It's coming tomorrow. So I don't know if people are going to want this or not. If you do, you want to order today, because we may not have any tomorrow. I did the best we could of getting as many ingredients and so we could get as many cans made as possible. It's a brand new formula. It's the immune stuff. Now, this value of this premium is $164.98. You're only paying $64.95. You're saving $100 or 60% off. What's in this very unique product? Well, how about we have astragalus, vitamin C, orange juice, L-lysine, acerola extract, amla extract, citrus bioflavonoids, turmeric, green tea, olive extract, echinacea, mushroom blends of organic maitake, organic reishi, organic cordyceps, many different, I think I have 10 different mushrooms in here, like lion's mane and zuling. And also we have grapeseed extract, rutin, bacillus, which is a probiotic, zinc, piperine, and selenium. Now, there's just nothing like this. Has a nice ginger lemon flavor, and you get a large can, and it's a month's supply. So it's got everything, turkey tail in here, Zuling, Mishimakapu, Chaga, Quercetin. It's got everything in here. So for those of you who care about your immune system, this is it. This has got it all. It is the most comprehensive formula I've ever put together. Now, I don't make claims. I'm simply saying that if you care about your immune system, this is what you start your day with. Coming with it is a DVD documentary, Supercharge Your Immune System. And this is an award-winning documentary. And I lead you on a tour of detailing everything about how to cleanse, detoxify, and rebuild your natural defenses from different illnesses, and along with a lot of people in here, including people who have reversed their diseases, including people who are a firefighter at the New York World Trade Center, first responder, who had to retire after the protocol was used, unretired. So you can work with an immune system that's been defeated and is low. So that's one documentary. And the next documentary, award-winning documentary, is Building the Immune System Naturally. Two separate ones, Dr. Joan Priestley, Dr. Marjorie Siebert, Dr. Sheila George, Dr. Zhang, Dr. Alan Sachs, Dr. Brown, Dr. Jerwala, and Dr. Robert Cathcart, Dr. Chris Calliope, Dr. Phil Hodes. All these people are in this. You get two documentaries with your can of immune stuff. And it's inexpensive. So there it is. It's only $64.95. You're saving $100 on that package. So how do you get it? It's simple. I'm going to give you the phone number. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. For those of you who order directly from Neil, 646-926-5430, 646-926-5430. If the phone's busy, please be patient. But it's coming in to inventory tomorrow. It's being shipped in the morning. We'll get it tomorrow, and we ship it right out the same day. So it's an inexpensive way of really, really honoring your immune system. What I'm not going to do is tell you what I know it will do based upon the nutrients. Took me a year to put this formula together. You have no idea how hard it was finding the ingredients, the right ingredients, the right synergistic blends, all based upon my review of the peer-reviewed literature. So that's it. Give a call for your immune stuff, 877-627-5065. And those who call today will get on the list, so you will get it. And normally I don't offer something to us in stock, but we know it's coming tomorrow. Now let's go over to Great Britain. Say hello to Elizabeth McCormick. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Gary. I have two things here on hair. So I'll start with Jose. He says, 25 years ago, I was in your big hair study. There were several thousand of us. You may recall we had to have three separate meetings for everyone in a high school auditorium for a year. I didn't see an improvement, but then again, I was doing a fifth of the protocol. I was eating a healthy diet, but I was not exercising, not supplementing or juicing, and I was highly stressed. Then 2 years ago, my new partner, who is also losing her hair, suggested that we try the protocol again. We watched your film and are 6 months in. Both of us are not losing our hair. We've seen new growth and our natural color is coming back. I wonder how many others like me didn't do the whole protocol and didn't get results, but we'd both like to thank you for this wonderful study. And then Carmen says, my hair has been thinning for the past 2 years. I've tried vitamins, minerals, massage, ointments, everything, in fact, except hair transplants. Do you have any advice for her, please?
Well, it's an interesting principle because it ties into something I read to you all earlier today, and that is that when you take in a healthy diet, but at the same time you continue to have an unhealthy diet, the unhealthy diet undoes the benefit of the healthy diet. That hair study, the first hair study, we had over 6,000 people sign up or show up. We had so many people that it took us the first night just to get people tested. For example, we had rulers, We had, if a person had dyed their hair, they weren't allowed in. They had to be bald, thinning, or gray for at least 7 years. And we had about 14 people, including nurses or physicians, who were there to make sure that a person was legitimately enrolling and had a need. And then we took a year meeting every 2 weeks to get protocols. And these meetings would go on for about 4 hours. So the protocols at the end of this time, we did not see a statistically significant improvement. And I'm thinking, how is that not possible? But we didn't, because we had a large group. I think we had about 1,500 people that actually qualified and stuck with the protocol, meaning they kept coming. But then about 3 or 4 months after that, I'm walking down the street, and this fella comes up to me. And he says, Gary, he says, remember me? I was in your hair study. Well, I didn't remember. I don't go down in the audience. I'm up on the stage talking, so I didn't see him. And I said, how are you doing? And he took off a beret, and he said, look at this. He said, my hair's growing. He said, I was almost bald. And I said, well, why now and not during the year? And then he looked, and he said, well, to be honest with you, a whole bunch of us would leave the lecture after it was over and go to a Chinese restaurant down the street, and we packed the whole place. Must have been 100, 120 of us in there. It was really about socializing. It was really about coming and getting information. But we were all honest. We weren't following the protocol. But now I'm following the protocol. I started following it about 3 months ago, and this is in the last 3 months. So then I went back and I asked the people in my office, called everyone who was in the protocol and asked them, did you follow the protocol? And 95% had not. They had not followed the protocol. So it didn't mean the protocol didn't work. It meant that they shouldn't have been in the study. That's why now when we do studies, we make sure people do their homework or they aren't allowed to come back to a meeting. And when I do these anti-aging studies, as the next one's coming up the last 2 weeks of April, I'm there every day. I'm there when they do their juices. I take them out on the road. John Q works with them in the gym, in the swimming pool. I'm there to make sure that they're eating, that they're taking all their supplements. So we make sure you adhere to the protocol. Well, we redid the study, and this time we had very strict standards. We had about 1,000 people. And if they couldn't prove to us that they were doing the study and doing journaling every day and what they were doing daily, they weren't allowed back in. And I remember the first time after we gave the orientation, I said, now listen, people, I'm going to be emphatic about this. I wasted a year of my life because people came just to socialize or because they were lonely, whatever reason it came. We, the staff, we lost all that time. I don't intend to lose any more time. So now they were sent away. No excuses. You didn't do your homework. You don't get back. We had a 93% success rate. People who were balding, people who were completely bald. And the people who benefited most were women going through menopause who had lost their eyebrows, thinning of the eyebrows. Because when you start seeing the thinning of the outside of your eyebrows, almost always your thyroid is underactive. So I had a whole protocol for the thyroid. Then the gray turned back to normal color. So yes, it works. Today, I do not, because of COVID and not being able to get a space back in New York large enough to have a meaningful study, and we tried doing a study online, and forget it, half the people were non-compliant. Some were compliant, that's good, many weren't. So what would a person do today who wants to thicken up their hair, get it back to its growing again? The new science that we didn't have then, or I would have used it, but today we do, it's laser caps. Now, there's lots of different laser caps, and they all pretty much work about the same. For example, there's one called the LLLT cap, and it has a couple hundred of these little tiny, looks like little tiny, tiny, tiny light bulbs, and about the size of a kernel of corn. And you put the cap on for about, well, it differs, anywhere from 20 minutes to a half hour every other day. And what it does is the laser lights, the red laser, stimulates the dormant follicles to become active again. It strengthens the hair. And in fact, someone did this just about 6 months ago. And they said that they were, in fact, I met him in an airport. down in Dallas, and they said, you know, every morning when they take a shower, they get sick of their stomach because they look in the shower and here's all this hair. I said, it's normal to lose anywhere between 20 to 50 hairs a day. No, I'm losing a lot more hair than that. So I said, okay, let's just take a look at what can happen. So I sat there, I had a little time, and I worked out a protocol. Protocol includes making sure that you're getting the branched chain amino acids. You can go into any health food store online, get branched chain amino acids. You have to take 50 milligrams of the B complex. Make sure you're getting enough B12, 1 milligram a day methylated, 1 milligram of folic acid methylated. Make sure that you're getting in your essential oils. That's very important. So you maintain hormone balance, including flaxseed oil. You could use hemp oil. You could use olive oil and coconut oil, combination of those. That's terrific for hair stabilization. Vitamin C is important. Exercise is important. But if you have a genetic predisposition, and I do, every single man, you're talking about 10 men in my family, bald as a billiard ball. And I was thinning when I was 18 years old. Now, mind you, vegan, taking every supplement possible, exercising, long-distance training, running, weight work, juicing. It didn't stop or even slow down the hair growth. That was genetic. And then I came up with a philosophy. And the philosophy was, and I'm sure you've heard this, it is called the laws. I just call it the law of compensation, meaning, and this is how I help people reverse disease, by the way. To the degree that you have any imbalance, hormonal, structural, genetic, viral, bacteria, parasite, and deficiency, injury, trauma, you must exceed the limitation. When you exceed it, and I don't have time now to explain it because we're at the end of our program, you go into an area of quantum reestablishment, meaning you reestablish a new energy that is dominant over the genetic energy. You have a new expression that goes into the cell. That's how, for example, with 200,000 milligrams intravenous vitamin C, I was able to reverse 18 people's AIDS condition. I mean, completely reverse it. The irony of it is, Wikipedia would have you believe I'm an AIDS denier, and yet the science, and you will hear this shortly from what I understand, is I'm the only person to reverse, full-blown medical documentation to prove it, 18 people out of 1,200 people. Not one of those 1,200 people died. They all got improved health. They were still HIV positive, but they were healthy and could live normal lives. But 18 went on an advanced protocol. In the advanced protocol, I upped the amount tremendously of everything, the zeolites, et cetera. And they were healthy, no diseases, no opportunistic infections, none of the 30 defining criteria for AIDS, and they were HIV negative. That's part of the laws of compensation. So when I did the same thing by taking massive amounts of different nutrients, I won't go into that now, my hair came back. And it was the phytonutrients where my hair came back. Huge amounts of servings of certain, and I don't want to get anyone to think, oh, all I have to do is that. No, you have to do a lot of things right. But now I have a full head of hair. In fact, you can see how thick my hair is. And that's out of just finishing a workout, getting out of the shower in the gym, and someone saying, hey, Gary, on your birthday, I'm going to take a picture, see how you look, and you can compare it to your other 10, 20, 30, 40-year-old. And I did. It's up on prn.fm. You can see it for yourself. Or on garynall.com, the new site. Look under photos and look under 2020 photos. Those are all taken the last 3 months. My hair grows phenomenally well. So for the average person, get one of the caps. Read the references to it. Read the reports on it. Read the endorsements of it. And select the one that you want. Generally, they go between $500 to $700, $800. But they all work on the same principle. Laser stimulation of the hair follicle. All right? We're out of time. Thank you, Elizabeth, for calling in and sharing that. We're out of time, everyone. I hope you gained some insight from today that we need a new direction, a new mindset, not one based upon hating people and demonizing people, based upon healing ourselves, healing, sharing a healing capacity so that we can go forward without being a police state. Have a nice day, everyone.